Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Yeah, what's up? It's your boy Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews. They're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yara.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It is official. All right, stop playing. Download and subscribe. Library Rap, the hip hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It's cold.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's your boy Farrell March in the building. I need y'all to make sure you subscribe and download to the podcast, Library Rap. Hip hop interviews with your boy Tim Einenkel. You already know. Birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Like birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly
together. Pause one. Welcome to Library Rap, the hip hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Thank you so much for being here.
What up? What up?
So first I want to know, tell me the story behind Pause One. You know, I was talking to friends about it, and they right away said, definitely sounds like a graph name.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So the one is usually a dead giveaway. So when I was doing, just being a kid, you know, out there fucking around, and I ran through a few names. And I was pretty much the last name that I had that didn't get burned. Cause you know, after a while they find out who you are or whatever, shit like that. So I ended up landing on that name, but right around that time, some of my boys in the crew I was in, they weren't really painting as much. They weren't really out doing shit as much. They started doing drugs and like, you know, more people got into other shit. And, so I just became a oneer, but I would still hang out with certain people, whatever. We'd go to parties in different places and like get drunk and rap. But it was really just pretty much like a hobby, you know, just to kind of join in here and there. I was terrible. A lot of us were. So it wasn't something I took serious. But I ended up getting better at it, and it became one of those things where like, okay, now we go somewhere and somebody from another crew or another group of dudes, you know, and then it would turn into like a little freestyle battle kind of thing. So I would just rap under the name because I didn't have another name. I didn't have an MC name. So I was just that name. And then from there, I started getting known for that. Like, yo, he raps pretty good or whatever. And but they knew me as that name. So I was like, all right, I'm kind of stuck with it. And I guess I probably, you know, if I wanted to change it, the time would have been when I kind of said, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And that was like, I want to say I was about, between 18 and 20 where I really made that decision and committed like, all right, music is something I want to do. And I probably should have came up with a different name then. But I think a part of it was just like, well, I already kind of built on this name. And you know, there's a certain generation of writers or people out here that knew me by that name. And I just kind of wanted them to know, like, fuck it, I'm gonna stick with it because I earned it out here, you know, doing graph and, you know, getting up and all that. So I guess a part of me wanted to bring some of that with me, was like, nah, I'm just going to keep it because that's why That's where I started.
Was there at the time of kind of learning your lyricist craft, right? Was there a artist that you were particularly listening to that said, "All right, this is the bar I want to set myself to get to"? You know, like, okay, if I could be half as good as this MC, then I know I made it.
You know what? It's crazy because it's a pretty diverse group of people, but I want to say, like, you know, being from LA, from out here, like, a lot of the stuff that you're introduced to first is what you'd expect, you know, the gangster rap shit. But there was always some dudes that, you know, stood out more than others. This is going to be an example. Now, a lot of people might not know who he is, but it's Trey D. Trey D is from the Eastsiders. And there's a song, Beware of My Crew. And there's a bunch of, you know, like Warren G, the G-Funk, the, you know, Death Row, all that, right? So this is like a branch off of that tree. And they had this song, and he was, he just stood out. Like, he just blew everybody away, because I was, at this point, I was aware of the difference between pretty much a rapper and an MC or a lyricist. Having listened to all these gangster rappers that are pretty much just saying, look, you know, I'll kill you. I got more money than you. I got more bitches than you. And really, yeah, ABC, you know, like Too Short is a good example, no disrespect. But Too Short didn't set out to be Rakim. Too Short just wanted to do Too Short. So for me, it was coming from that and then being introduced to some guys that could actually, like, really put words together and, like, had, you know, multiple layers to it in the syllables and certain shit. And then being in school, getting introduced to Nas and Wu and, you know, and all these other people, and it opened up that whole world. And then I started listening to that, and I was like, okay, I definitely don't want to sound like none of these dudes, but I want that to be the bar where, if I'm compared to them at all, you know, in any sense, I'll be happy with that. And some of those names I just mentioned, you know, Ice Cube's a big one, Scarface, the storytelling, the realism. And but on the flip side of that, it's like, you know, like I said, like the Nas's, you know, shit, Redman. Like, there's a bunch of different people, because he's a little more comedic. So some stuff is, it's a real wide range. And I think I just kind of wanted to fall amongst that. You know what I mean?
Right. I was listening to an interview of yours, you know, from years ago, but you talked about being, you know, freestyling, then writing, then freestyling, then back to writing again. And I thought it was kind of interesting, that journey that you took, right? But there's also lessons that you probably, that I imagine these are lessons that you've also learned from each of these type of styles. What were your major takeaways from, and how did each of these, how did freestyling help your writing, and how did writing help your freestyling?
So what's crazy is, like, you know, coming out here and the hip hop thing, you know, at the time it was like, even every element was like, you got to pretty much earn your spot. You got to fight your way in, right? Like, you couldn't just show up and be like, yo, I'm the best out here. And I'll show you tomorrow, though. You know, I'll show you tomorrow. And you got to really actually do the shit. So, like I said, in the beginning, it was just, you know, we get drunk, smoke weed and rap and, you know, kind of clown each other and whatever and try our best to tell, you know, our little individual stories. But it wasn't polished by no means, none of that. But eventually, like, because I read a lot. So I read a lot. I used to write a lot of stories when I was a kid. That was kind of my way. That was my escape, was to write stories about, you know, certain shit. And so putting things together like that in a writing sense, I already kind of had that. And freestyling, I started to kind of blend the two. But where it really took a turn was, it went from freestyling and just kind of talking about, you know, what I went through the day, what I'm trying to do, and fuck these bitches and cops and this and whatever, right? And then it turned into, you know what? Let me actually say some shit, because I really want people to hear my story. I want them to know, like, you know, what to look out for, or this or that, or how I feel about this. So I started writing stuff out. But I got turned into a weapon because I got better at freestyling. So like I said earlier, it would pretty much, my guy would go across the room and talk shit to that crew. And it's like, well, our guy's better than you. He's better than your guy. And then, like, they'll come back and be like, yo, guess what? I got you. You know what I mean? Like, he says he's better than you. And you'd have that whole thing. So now we're at a party and we're ciphering in the corner and I'm pretty much defending the crew's honor. Like, I'm the one that they threw out there. And I just started getting, you know, better and better at that. And it took me down that path. And I started getting signed up for battles. And I was winning pretty much all of them, right? Not to say I wasn't signed up for all of them, but I was winning the ones I signed up for, a majority of them. So, but I was like, yo, this is, I didn't want to do this. This isn't what I set out to do. I just wanted to write. But you kind of get swept up in it because you're winning money and people, you know, they know your name and this and that. But I was like, nah, I want to write. So I went back to that. But in the process of battling and things like that, I was like, all right, well, let me try to digest. Let me try to absorb and build the vocabulary so I don't run out of it. Let me try different patterns of rhyming and, you know, different things just to get better. So if I did battle, I never wrapped myself into a corner. I never wrapped myself into a hole. And I'd always find, you know, a rebuttal. You know what I mean? Shit like that.
I was listening to an interview and you talked about how people didn't realize what they were in terms of your skill level of a freestylist because they saw you and you're Hispanic. And you know, they would talk shit about how like you definitely like you can't do, you know, you can't rhyme because of your ethnicity. Did that ever get to you? And two, like, did you ever feel like, all right, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, but if that, even if so, like what was that reassurance for you to keep going?
I guess a big part of it, you know, to kind of address first is it's not like a poor me, like I'm not the only Hispanic dude on earth that raps, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so there's a ton of people, you know, there's probably a super dope Cambodian dude that people were sleeping on. So it's like that. And I think it's because it's lazy and it's easier for people to say, hey, if you're going to rap, you need to look like this. You need to sound like this. There's already, you know, an archetype. There's already, you know what I'm saying? There's something that's accepted. In the look and the sound. So showing up to places where I was genuinely just trying to be like, yo, my life's kind of shitty right now. I want to talk about this and this and this. Just kind of get shit off my chest in the session, in the cipher. And it turns into, you know, they're coming at you. They're throwing subliminal shit. They're throwing jabs at you. And then now you got to turn into, you know, that mode where you're like, all right, well, no, I'm going to chop you down now. Embarrass you. And but that was one part of it. But I didn't realize like how deeply rooted it is in the music industry. So moving from, you know, the rappity rap side and just trying to be dope into like actually trying to move records and, you know, talk to publicists and, you know, points and PR and all this shit. You're like, whoa, there's people out there that are really working against having somebody other than them succeed. And but what kind of let me know that I was good, I guess one of the most recent ones was I was in prison with Razkaz. And when I was in prison with him, that we used to have to go to these bullshit meetings, right? Some drug meetings. And because pretty much if you had drugs on your record, you had to attend a certain amount of classes or whatever the fuck. So anyway, we're in there and I was talking to him just randomly. Because we had already kind of established, like, we were pretty cool. And I was just telling him, like, yo, man, this shit's frustrating music-wise, whatever, whatever. And he reassured me, and he pretty much said, he's like, yeah, you know, my people say that they got me. He's like, but your people say, yeah, but we got him.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, shit, my people feel that way? Like, that's pretty fucking cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And because it I didn't see it. But then I started to notice. I was like, you know what? That dude over there does kind of always ask me what I'm writing and he wants to hear. I was like, you know what? Because I was oblivious to that. Like, I didn't know people gave a shit about me. Mm. You're kind of like, you know, you got your blinders on. But that one let me know, like, all right, I'm pretty good. This guy's fucking one of the best ever. And he thinks I'm good. And he's telling me that, you know, my people are kind of, they're saying that I'm their representative in a sense. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's so dope. That was pretty dope.
That's dope. Yeah, that's real cool. I was going to ask you, like, if there was, like, freestyle battle that you had that kind of reassured you that you were, you know, doing this well, but it seems like that conversation would be the conversation to have.
That one, yeah, that was dope. That was years later. Like, I think with the freestyle battle thing, you know what? It was a losing experience. It was a losing experience because Ganja K, rest in peace, from Freestyle Fellowship. So I had did this battle in, it was in Orange County out here. And I went through every round, and I pretty much made it to the end. But I ended up losing, and I lost to it was rigged. I didn't know. I figured out the politics, but it was basically rigged to keep the prize money in the circle, in their own pocket, right? And afterwards, yeah, I was pissed. I was pissed. I was like, yo, that's diaper money, because at the time my son was real small. I wasn't working and shit. So I was like, you know, I was mad. Plus, you know, I didn't want to, who wants to lose? So I go outside and I'm trying to cool off because I'm hot. And he followed me out and he's like, yo, man. And he's just telling me, you know, this and this. He's like, I don't give a fuck what they said. You won, da 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 da. Because he was just a host. He wasn't a judge. And I'm like, yo, this dude is from Freestyle Fellowship. You know, it's like West Coast. Like these dudes are legendary, you know?
Yeah.
And for him to tell me that, that was a big one. That was years before the Razzcast thing, but that was one of those things where it kind of let me know, like, all right, and it opened my eyes to the politics. And had he not said that, who knows? I probably would have been like, you know what, fuck this shit. But he went out of his way to come tell me, and he even went on stage after, and he's like, yo, I know you gave the money to that man, but my man right here took it. Like, he let it be known, and I was like, damn, he didn't have to do that.
Right.
But that was really dope.
That's dope. When you and Razzcast were in prison together, was there a moment of not just conversation, but was there a collaboration, any sort of, even if the collaboration didn't go anywhere, but was there like collaboration in terms of writing and kind of showing each other their writing skill, your writing?
You know what was crazy was, you know, I always wanted to ask him, you know, like, yo, bro, like, how did you do this and how'd you come up with that? And, you know, you're just trying to, like, you're the apprentice, you know what I mean? The dude is, you know, a master craftsman. You're like, but I don't want to bother the guy. You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, like, we are in prison and there's a lot of racial politics and there's a whole lot of stuff, lines that can't be crossed. So, I, you know, with all those things in play, I was like, you know what? I got to find a way to approach this. So I ended up gradually, you know, building, you know, a rapport with him and talking to him. And like, he had like the dopest library in there. He had like all the books. Like, I read, he had DMX's book, he has biography, he had a bunch of shit. And he had the best CD library, in my opinion. Like, he had like Big Pun, he had a bunch of people in there, dope shit. Tribe Called Quest, whoever. Like, he had a lot of stuff. And I would end up borrowing shit from him. I had a few things too that I would shoot to him or whatever. Eventually I seen him, I seen a notepad on his bunk. Of course I'm gonna ask him what he's writing. You know what I'm saying? Here's my chance. And I noticed on the side, on the little, you know, outside the little margins on the side, he had like little shit he wrote. And I asked him, like, yo, what's that? And he told me, he's like, yo, when I write something, I like to leave myself notes on the side. And I was like, yo, that's pretty fucking genius, you know?
Yeah.
So that was like one of those moments, like, oh shit. And you know what? I didn't want to ask him, like, hey, bro, let's write a song. You know, we're in prison, like, we don't want to fucking be in here.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hard to be creative in that environment. So I stayed cool with them. And what was dope was when I got out, I was working on my first mixtape. That I had started it before I got locked up. I finished it when I got out. And I was working on my second one. I wrapped up the first one and I reached out like, hey, bro, you know, because he said, like, yo, hit me up when you get out. And nice. I asked him, like, yo, would you mind blessing me with something on this? Like, I'll take care of you. We'll figure it out. And it was dope. It worked out. And he was like, hey, I'm working on this. Can you do a verse for me on this? I got a beat from Rapmatic from the Beat Junkies. And I was like, fuck yeah. But it was a sink or swim moment because I was in the studio with him. And it was like, he tells the engineer, hey, pull up that beat, the such and such beat. And I'm, you know, I'm sitting there like just kind of fly on the wall. He's like, yo, you got anything for this? I want you to jump on this. And I was like, yeah. and I went through my notepad or whatever, and I just fucking pulled that one out the hat,
nice,
polished it up a bit, and I did it on the spot. And I think that was, you know, his way of also saying, like, yo, okay, I saw you write rhymes in there, but this is showtime. Let's see if you can actually execute, you know, when there's pressure. And so I ended up on his Adidas album. And it was just a dope experience. I've learned a lot from him. Dude is, you know, he's definitely been like a big brother, you know what I'm saying? And like, still, I'm still a fan of his, you know. But yeah, that's one of those experiences of you know, trying to write together, but more or less like getting something done at the right time.
You know, you're speaking of lyrics, your Face the Facts songbook is made up, yeah, of lyrics and notes about the songs, and the cover is made up of faces such as Bruce Lee, Dr. Martin Luther King, Richard Pryor, Biggie, John Lennon, and so many others. First of all, why sell a book with your lyrics in them? You know, there's some artists that think, like, you know, they try to keep their lyrics sacred, right? But this is out to the public. Why do that? Why sell the book?
Well, what I used to do when I was younger was I used to go through vinyl records and CDs, like my stepdad's collection, or, you know, whoever, my mom, whoever had my uncles. And I don't know why, but I'd be drawn to the words of it. So you pull out the sleeve of the vinyl record, and on the backside, it'd have, you know, all the rhymes, all the lyrics to it. And then, you know, you're singing along with it, you're kind of reading along with it. And I'm like, oh shit, that's a pretty deep line right there. You know, like, as a kid, like, it was meaningful. So then when I started getting into rhyming and writing my own shit, when I first dedicated myself to it, I went and I printed out a shitload of verses from all the people that I consider, you know, the greats. And I would sit there and I would like highlight shit, circle shit. I try to reverse engineer, like, how the fuck did he come up with that, you know? And not to take anything other than the how. I'm not taking the what, I'm taking the how. And just to kind of get into that space of thinking, like the perspective, the angle that they came from. And I appreciated the fact that a lot of those lyrics were online. They weren't put up by the artists themselves, but they were available. A fan went and did it for them.
Right.
So with Face the Facts, you know, that was my first album. I listen to it now, and, you know, there's parts where I cringe a majority of the time because I'm like, shit, I would have did it this way, or I would have said it this way, or, you know, I'm kind of my own worst critic, like a lot of people. But there's people to this day that remember lines from some of these songs. So I'm like, oh shit, I've become what I used to look for. So I'm like, all right, well, if people want that, let me put it in a book, and not only write the rhymes in it, but also explain, because, you know, for some people it was like, why would you put all these people on your cover?
Right.
Like, kind of like Sgt. Pepper's. It's like, why would you do that? What does it mean? And I over time it got a little tiring to explain the whole fucking thing. But so I would just be like, all right, well, this is basically Face the Facts. And like, all these people inspired me. You know, they all faced their individual, you know, shortcomings, all the obstacles. They did their thing and so on and so forth. So it's Face the Facts, you know, all that. Anyway, but yeah, I put it all in the book so people could have it, see it, read it. And what I'm noticing is there's a good amount of people that are buying them for their kids, which surprised me, because I didn't think that was really going to happen. Somebody pointed it out, like, hey, you're kind of keeping those people on the cover. You're keeping, you're showing, you know, 5-year-old kids who, there's a video, this girl bought a book and her sons, she's pointing out who everybody is. And he knows who one or two of them already are. So what's dope is, like, there's going to be somebody who knows who, you know, Bruce Lee is outside of the movies. You know, like, they're going to see, like, and then go back and look for them and then learn their individual story, hopefully at a time when it's impactful to them. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Kind of what you want hip hop to be, right? It's like, you not just learn the lyrics, but also learn about the people that are even quoted, yeah, you know, talked about in the lyrics, but you obviously do with a visual representation as well. What is that? I was going to ask you about the pick three faces, but I'm going to ask you about this one face. If there's one face on that book, on that cover, that is your go-to kind of inspiration, which face would that be?
And you know what's crazy? It's almost like it's like Marvel versus Capcom. It's kind of like a Street Fighter where, like, those are all the guys I would pick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like right now you're asking me, like, shit, if I got to fight Magneto, like, who would I pick? So it always varies, but, like, I look at it sometimes and then one will jump out, you know?
Right.
It depends, you know, it depends, but, like, I can't say one is more meaningful than the other. There's nobody on there that I didn't want on there, obviously, you know? Like, I think with the MCs, that was a big one too, was like, you know, people were like, yo, you can't put them on there. And I'm like, well, fuck, why not? Well, you know, because they're going to think that you're trying to use these guys to sell your shit, and they're not even on it. They're not even on the songs and this, and you don't even mention them in the songs. And I'm just like, I don't give a fuck about that.
Right.
You know, like, the whole point is like, they inspired me. So this is kind of my way of, you know, paying homage.
That's dope. I want to turn to the EP, Random Acts of Violence. It's a collaboration between Evolve and yourself. How did this project come together? Especially, obviously, we're in COVID times. So, I mean, how did the project get together?
So, me and Evolve been cool for a while. Like, we did a song for one of his projects years ago, and he's always been cool. Definitely dope, and we have a lot in common. Like, there's a lot of similarities. Like, his approach to the music game and things like that. You know, he's independent, so he goes out, he travels, he throws himself into new environments to see, like, if he can, you know, gain a fan or two. And he, you know, he's willing to fight for every inch, you know what I'm saying? Which is it's a lot like my story. So we ended up being cool. We did a song, then we did another song, and I had told him, like, yo, like, that if we do a song, like, for my shit, I would rather do a project because it's something that I'd be able to do more with, you know?
Right.
And I had said it a few times, and then finally it was like, hey, I got this opportunity. If you're available, you know, I want to do, like, an EP. And so we, you know, I wrote stuff here, he wrote stuff there, recorded it there, sent it back, I sent mine, and we did it that way. Then we listened to it, but it didn't have that feeling, you know? So he was like, bro, I'll fly out there. Let's just re-record it. If we got to change a few lines, we'll do that. We'll come up with, you know, we'll just glue it together. So he came back out and we redid it all. And then, you know, there was some issues with files and things like that. It was kind of a fucking headache, but right. That's usually a big part of it. But yeah, that's pretty much how it started, was just, you know, linking up with him, seeing he was dope, seeing he was hungry, seeing how he did things, having a lot in common, and then like, hey, bro, I want to do this. And I mean, it's right now, like, you know, it's one of those things where there is no crazy marketing budget. There wasn't 15 grand set aside to do, you know, just marketing, you know, Facebook ads and shit like that. So a lot of it is organic, and it's good to see, you know, like, I wasn't even paying attention to this, but he started texting links. So I'm like, what is this shit? And what it was there are links to sites that are already bootlegging the album. Before the album dropped, wow, there were sites that had the album artwork up and they had the release date set. And then they're pretty much like just waiting for it to drop so they can fucking bootleg it to torrent shit or whatever.
Right.
And I can't really be mad because, hey, like, if it's worth stealing, then it's worth something. So that, you know.
But what do you do with that? So, like, what do you do with, I guess, what's the backup plan in terms of the monetary gain from the creation of the EP?
I mean, look, calling it what it is, you know, I've done the math on a lot of shit, and a lot of these people that appear to be making a fucking great living off of rap are not.
Right.
That's, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I think I think the veil has kind of been pierced on that. People kind of know, you know, they rather tune it out and listen to their favorite rapper talk about being, you know, this or that. But having seen the numbers, I'm like, yo, directly from songs, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. I'm not going to be able to pay for this or that or live the life I want to live. So I have to be creative in other ways. Luckily, the fans that I have, the people that support, they like to own stuff like the book, you know, like shirts, like buttons, pins, hoodies, hats. They want stuff. So, you know, taking notes from Tech Nine and people like that, it's like people want a piece of what you do. The songs are great. It's the soundtrack, you know, it's a part of their life. But if they can wear it and they can have it and they can hang it on their wall, like it's, you know, you make a little action figure or something.
Right.
It's like Doom is a prime example. There's no greater example than Doom. So I think that's where I've been able to kind of stay afloat financially, is just people that support. And sometimes there's been fans that are like, they'll buy a box of CDs. And I'm like, is this dude selling my shit? Like reselling it?
Right.
Which I don't really give a shit. Like, that's awesome. But, you know, sometimes they do, and other times they're like, hey, honestly, I buy them, I put a couple away, and I give away the rest because I want people to hear it. And I'm like, damn, that's pretty dope because you spent a good amount of money on this. So, you know what I'm saying? Thank you. But that's pretty much the answer to that. Like, there's no way to stop the bleeding over there.
Right.
You know?
Right. And we obviously did it too, like, you know, some, you know, mixed, you know, bootlegs on the corner, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. So,
yep.
Obviously it's more accessible now because of the internet, but, the 16 shots, featuring, Copyright and DJ Eyeball. Can you talk about the creation of this track and kind of, do you have a favorite lyric about on this track?
So that was the one that, I think that was the last one we did. Because it's one of those ones you can't... We didn't want to do the, okay, you write a verse, I'll write a verse, and then we'll just throw it on it. Because Copy's dope. Copy's been dope.
Yeah.
So, like, I already knew he was going to do his thing. No question. And it's not to outdo him. But the thing is, okay, how can we add a different dimension to it? So we didn't have anything where we went back and forth yet. So I was like, yo, let's do it on that one. It was either my idea or his, or we came to the same idea at the same time or whatever. So we sat here and we wrote it. And usually it's like, yo, I'm going to rhyme off of your last line or whatever, that type of shit, right? And you're reading this shit to each other and like, all right, I got four, you know, let me hear your four. And it was one of those. For me, just building off of each other, I think just the, like, for me, trying to add an element of humor to it, he says, dick down your baby mama out of spite. And I was like, oh, that's dope, you know? And then I'm like, all right, well, how can I add to that? How can I play off of that? Have her chained to the glory hole. That's how the story goes. Hit her with the DP, double stuffed Oreo. Just to kind of make it a little funny, more graphic, a little more, you know what I'm saying? And it played into what some of the shit Copy, because Copy, he's got a good sense of humor too. So all of that kind of shines through. And, that one was probably the funnest to make. So, and then Eyeball came through, and what was crazy was there wasn't a big window for him to do scratches.
Yeah.
So when I sent it to him, he's like, yo, bro, there's not a lot of room. And he was right. It's like a weird, like, 3.5 bar count or some shit like that. And I was like, all right, well, I started digging for samples, and then he ended up showing up, and I was like, you know what? Fuck it, just use this, see if that fits. And then 16 shots, and I was like, all right, cool. And we're trying to figure out a title, like literally the day before we got to turn everything in. And we're like, fuck it, let's just call it 16 shots. We didn't want to call it that, but in the end, it made sense. So that one was pretty fun.
Vultures is the I guess it's described as the it's the leak. It's the second leak, right? This of the album for the project. Why did you guys decide to have this as the second track to be released?
That's a good question. I think it was listening to, I think it was either the production, or I think it was like kind of more like it was at the high, like the top of our list, his and mine, of like the ones that we felt would make the most sense to put out. Yeah, that one was cool too, because I wrote the hook, you know, the Prodigy, the Mobb Deep, you know, like the Halfway Crooks and all that, and spelling it Vultures like a vault.
Yeah.
Just, you know, everybody, it just those little things that some people might not catch, but with the Mobb Deep thing and then, you know, the Vultures, dude, just talking about people being scavengers and cutting each other's throats and just how the game is. And so the Halfway Crooks, you know, I was like, okay, well, if you take two of them, it makes a whole. So I was like, okay, a bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Birds of a feather flying, circling together. A bunch of halfway crooks fit perfectly together. So his he's got some dope lines on there. And but yeah, it was a mutual thing. Like, yeah, I think that one's the one we should drop next.
Dope. Was there a I mean, creating this you've obviously done this for a fair amount of, you know, you've done this for a fair amount of time. Was there a favorite aspect or kind of a story of this album coming together or during the creation of this EP?
Shit, you know what? I think the work that was put into gathering the files, for whatever reason, it blocks out any others, in my mind at least, like making sure all the stems and, you know, the backup vocals, the dubs and the sound effect, like all of that, for me, I guess that process kind of eclipses anything that any other story I could really tell. You know all what right. I mean?
That's dope.
Just because it's tedious. So shout out to the engineers, if any, that are listening to this, because you guys don't get enough credit. Like sitting there and like, where do you want this? Where do you want the explosion? You know, like, sounds good over here, but you want it over there? All right. You know, is it too loud? All right, it's not loud enough. And being on that side of it on this project, I had to put stuff kind of where I had to make basically like mock mixes to send to the guy. And Fezzy, shout out to Fezzy. Shout out to Fred X. But yeah, I think that for me is it. But working with them is dope. We're going to work on a follow-up soon. We're hoping to get the whole thing done by like maybe like Stu Bangers, or, you know, a certain producer that has that kind of consistent sonically, creatively. So all across the board, it's one producer and us, and do another EP hopefully soon.
I'm going to go back a little bit. You, in 2012, you were asked three CDs you can't live without. And you said at the time, Sublime, Razzcaz, Adidas, and a burned CD your cousin made with classic rock, reggae, and some old hip hop songs. Fast forward to 10 years later, same three CDs. Are these still, can you live without, are there different three CDs you can't live without, or are they the same?
You know what? It'd probably be the same, but in between those, I'd probably stream some new shit. Like, it's funny because I played this song the other day. This girl was playing music, and she's like, yeah, you want to play anything? And I was like, yeah, let me throw this on. And it's Russ. And I played it. And she's like, oh, yeah, this song's good. It's an old song. And I'm like, is it? I mean, because I, you know what I'm saying? I didn't catch it when it came out.
Right, right.
So to me, it's not old. This shit's just dope. So I was listening to it, and but it was just funny because she's like, "Oh yeah, it's an old song," and then I had to look it up, and I was like, "Yeah, it's 5 years old, but that's not that old, right?"
Yeah, that doesn't seem old.
At least in my opinion. But it was just funny. But yes, I'd have to add a little bit of stuff in between those CDs, some newer stuff. Like I like Daptone Records; they're really dope. Manahan Street Band, stuff like that. You know what I mean? I've added that in the rotation.
Pause on you know, reading up on you and talking to you now, like this, your story is like very interesting in terms of like going from, you know, graph to writing, lyricist writing to, you know, even being, you know, talking to Razzcaz in prison, stuff like that. My last question for you is, What has the biggest gift been for you that hip hop has given you that you didn't know was going to be given to you?
It's weird because it's interconnected with it. I don't want to just say purpose, you know, because that sounds kind of cool. But I think what it did was it gave me an outlet. It gave me an outlet first and foremost was to express myself, and from that, turning it into a business, if you want to call it that, being able to make stuff, you know, write songs, sell vinyl, sell albums, make appearances, perform and get paid. That helped me provide for my son. But more importantly, it helped me set an example to my son and my sister that, hey, look, you literally saw where I came from and you saw what I went through. But I was able to, you know, turn that into this. I'm an alchemist. I was able to turn that into this, and I've been doing my best. So you guys have a little bit more opportunities. Things have changed, but don't use that as an excuse because you saw where I came from. So for me, that's probably the biggest thing, the biggest gift that I've, you know, been given is like, hey, look, he's not a piece of shit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where, you know, I could have been sleeping under a bridge, you know, on heroin or in prison doing, you know, 2-3 life sentences or dead. And, you know, I've seen all of those things, and I didn't want them to see me doing that because I didn't want them to think that that was an option. That's not even an option. That's not even a fucking alternative. You guys got to do something.
That's dope. It's Pause One, new EP, Random Acts of Violence with Evolve. Pause One, thank you so much for being on the library Rap the Hip Hop Interviews with Tim Heineke. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Tim. A shout out to everybody that checked this out. Thank you guys for listening to the interview and keeping this thing going.
What's good, y'all? This is Breeze Bruin from the Mighty Juggernauts. And make sure you subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the Hip Hop Interviews with Tim Heineke. Hip Hop Journalism on the highest level. Birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Like birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Birds of a feather flying, circling together. Bunch of halfway crooks fitting perfectly together. Raised by animals, they know me as Mowgli. So throw me the stogie, my eyes wide looking out for bogeys. Study patterns, how the vultures behave. No reason to rant and rave over a culture I can't save. My words are power like a rifle to a slave. Creature siphon energy, similar to vampires. Watching out for skinwalkers, gather around a campfire. Spreading rumors, better know the source.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.